Martin's Close. Some few years back I was staying with the rector of a parish in the west, where the society to which I belong owns property. I was to go over some of this land, and on the first morning of my visit, soon after breakfast, the estate carpenter and general handyman, John Hill, was announced as in readiness to accompany us. The rector asked which part of the parish we were to visit that morning. The estate map was produced, and when he had showed him our round, he put his finger on a particular spot. "Don't forget," he said, "to ask John Hill about Martin's Close when you get there. I should like to hear what he tells you." "What ought he to tell us?" I said. "I haven't the slightest idea," said the rector. "Or, if that is not exactly true, it will do till lunchtime." And here he was called away. We set out. John Hill is not a man to withhold such information as he possesses on any point, and you may gather from him much that is of interest about the people of the place and their talk. An unfamiliar word, or one that he thinks ought to be unfamiliar to you, he will usually spell as C-O-B, Cobb, and the like. It is not, however, relevant to my purpose to record his conversation before the moment when we reached Martin's Close. The bit of land is noticeable, for it is one of the smallest enclosures you are likely to see, a very few square yards, hedged in with quickset on all sides, and without any gate or gap leading into it. You might take it for a small cottage garden, long deserted, but that it lies away from the village and bears no trace of cultivation. It is at no great distance from the road, and is part of what is there called a moor, in other words, a rough upland pasture cut up into largish fields. "Why is this little bit hedged off so?" I asked, and John Hill, whose answer I cannot represent as perfectly as I should like, was not at fault. Here Mr. Attorney made a pause and shifted with his papers, and it was thought remarkable by me and others because he was a man not easily dashed. Lord Chief Justice: "Well, Mr. Attorney, what is your instance?" Attorney: "My Lord, it is a strange one, and the truth is that, of all the cases I have been concerned in, I cannot call to mind the like of it. But to be short, gentlemen, we shall bring you testimony that Anne Clark was seen after this 15th of May, and that, at such time as she was so seen, it was impossible she could have been a living person." Here the people made a hum, and a good deal of laughter, and the court called for silence. And when it was made, Lord Chief Justice: "Why, Mr. Attorney, you might save up this tale for a week. It will be Christmas by that time, and you can frighten your cookmaids with it." At which the people laughed again, and the prisoner also, as it seemed. "God, man, what are you prating of? Ghosts and Christmas jigs and tavern company? And here is a man's life at stake," to the prisoner. "And you, sir, I would have you know that there is not so much occasion for you to make merry, neither. You were not brought here for that, and if I know Mr. Attorney, he has more in his brief than he has shown yet. Go on, Mr. Attorney. I need not, mayhap, have spoken so sharply, but you must confess your course is something unusual." Attorney: "Nobody knows it better than I, my lord, but I shall bring it to an end with a round turn. I shall show you, gentlemen, that Anne Clark's body was found in the month of June in a pond of water with the throat cut, that a knife belonging to the prisoner was found in the same water, that he made efforts to recover the said knife from the water, that the coroner's quest brought in a verdict against the prisoner at the bar, and that, therefore, he should by course have been tried at Exeter, but that, suit being made on his behalf, on account that an impartial jury could not be found to try him in his own country, he hath had that singular favour shown him that he should be tried here in London, and so we will proceed to call our evidence." Then the facts of the acquaintance between the prisoner and Anne Clark were proved, and also the coroner's inquest. I pass over this portion of the trial, for it offers nothing of special interest. Sarah Arscott was next called and sworn. Attorney: "What is your occupation?" Sarah: "I keep the new inn at—" Attorney: "Do you know the prisoner at the bar?" Sarah: "Yes. He was often at our house since he come first at Christmas of last year." Attorney: "Did you know Anne Clark?" Sarah: "Yes, very well." Attorney: "Pray, what—"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?